Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Thursday, and the Combine is starting tonight. So I'm going to get you ready for that as best as I can. Got a few positions we'll go over. Had some interesting tidbits continuing to come from the Combine itself. News from more on what Kevin Colbert was saying when he was talking at the Combine. Also, just some more news with this CBA. Got a lot to cover. Let's get into it. All right, everybody. Let's get to some of the top things. Going back over Kevin Colbert's stuff, I forgot to mention, and because it was so far down the list of things, I forgot to mention for Kevin Colbert that he brought up and the question of Antonio Brown came up and he just kind of just flatly said no. So that was interesting, just because, you know, ESPN and everyone else wants to keep thinking the Steelers are bringing back Antonio Brown. And even though, like, you know, Mike Tomlin's asked, he said that we have no business interest at this time. That was his best job of giving a professional answer without, you know, coming across the wrong way or anything and just staying neutral about stuff. But, you know, still people were like, oh, they left the door open. Maybe they will. No, it's not happening. Stop thinking that it will. So there's that. But then, you know, continuing to look at the Combine, just kind of give you a rundown of what today is going to be like. So for those who don't know, the Combine is split over 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and there's different position groups that will take the field and run the different drills that they have. Now, today they have tight ends, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. You can it's actually very different this year. Normally it's during the middle of the day. It's something you can't watch unless you're taking off from work or you're home and you're just sitting there on the NFL Network. Now it's in the prime time. It goes from 4 to 11. So you can watch the whole thing that way. It's going to be really interesting. Tight ends, quarterbacks, and receivers. An interesting group to watch. Those are definitely all positions the Steelers could potentially address with this NFL draft. You know, quarterback probably the least likely, based off of Kevin Colbert's coming out and saying how defending how they feel about their quarterback, you know, room with Ben Roethlisberger being healthy again. So there's that, but the Steelers definitely need to address the tight end position. And they probably won't end up doing so until the middle rounds, but that's on the list. And considering that this is an insane wide receiver class, this would be the time to add a receiver without spending too high on one. I know a lot of people want to get guys at the top of the class with that second round pick, and I'm just kind of like, oh, but they've been doing that for the past 3 straight years. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster, second round pick. James Washington, second round pick. Deontay Johnson, third round pick, but it's like an early third round pick. So that he was almost a second round pick. I think they've invested enough in wide receiver. I think they need to either if a lineman falls to them, pick that guy. And they need a mauler back on the offensive line to be the third part of the third anchor, along with Pouncey and DeCastro. And honestly, for those, I've gotten to some serious debates with y'all on this in the Facebook group. You know, there's a lot of who's like, oh, we don't need a running back. Actually, the Steelers do. You know, I don't care what you say. The fact that James Conner, Benny Snell, and Jalen Samuels all were hurt this past season, and none of them have been consistent. I think that speaks to a lot. And they're all middle round guys. Conner, third round. Snell, fourth round. Samuels, fifth round. I know people are like, well, you don't need running backs anymore. It's like, yeah, you do. You know, you can get away with it if you have a supreme quarterback. If you have Patrick Mahomes. And I know everyone's excited about Ben Roethlisberger, but you know, as excited as I am to see him get back to the field, they need to balance this offense. They cannot have him slinging the ball around left and right. So that's why I think that getting a running back would be beneficial and maybe even their most likely move because, again, just looking at the top boards, there's only about four teams ahead of them that need a running back bad enough that they might draft one in the top rounds. So there's a really good chance that some of the best running backs fall to them. Not as much of a chance that some of the best offensive linemen fall to them. I also think they could sneak some of the offensive linemen that they could actually want and use into the third round. Only today did Damian Lewis. He's like my favorite guard to talk about. But he's from LSU. Everyone's looking at Lloyd Cushenberry III. Also. Awesome name. If they got him, I would not be mad either. But he's probably going in the first or second round before they even get to the podium. But Damian Lewis, he doesn't have the same reputation. He had some injuries. Only recently were there a couple like draft profiles put up on them. A lot of people had like no notes on him. I thought that was very interesting. I did like a whole tape study on just the way that he plays. And just he's just a mauler. He just eats people for breakfast. And sure, he can work on some technique here and there, but it was rather impressive. So, like, I think if you can get that guy in the third round with that compensatory pick that's supposed to come their way, I think they're in a good spot. But the running back position, getting a playmaker, someone that can change the game on offense, especially while Ben Roethlisberger's here, it's tough to get those kind of linemen when you're picking through, you know, in the teens of how many linemen have already been selected, where you can pick some of the best running backs to go. Now, running backs don't run or don't take the field until Friday, so that's a whole other story. But today, you got wide receivers, tight ends, and quarterbacks. As far as quarterbacks go, I'm interested to see what Jalen Hurts runs. I want to see how that works out. And keep an eye on how the throwing drills go, because Joe Burrow is not going to throw in. Joe Burrow's in that position. This often happens when you know you're the top pick. You don't need to do anything, because all that's going to happen is if you disappoint people, you might lose the top pick status, and you don't know that, or you might get hurt and then you lose it that way. You don't need to compete against anybody. You've already done enough to do that to win your argument. But you know, as far as the positions the Steelers are concerned about, they're definitely concerned about wide receiver and tight end. They've already met with two players in that department. One, Jalen Reagor, the big play wide receiver from TCU. They met with him, and they also met with big body tight end from Missouri, Albert Okwugbunam. I believe that's how you pronounce it. I may be messing that up, but he's a bigger guy that can block and catch. He's not an extremely dangerous receiving tight end, but he's also not an extremely great blocker. But that's what the Steelers need. They need a guy that can do both. They haven't had someone who can contribute on the line the way they wanted to. There's going to be a lot more interviews that come out over the next week about what the Steelers did, because a lot of this is also the Steelers don't just let the combine dictate everything. That's just not how they do. This is why they pick well. They look at production, they look at character, they look at how everything fits. Now they'll take some of those measurables and be like, okay, well, that's interesting, and take that back to the drawing board when comparing players. But ultimately, they're looking for a guy that can get the job done. And you know, the combine can sometimes fool you so much. You know, Bud Dupree still has had one of the best combines as far as explosiveness goes in NFL history, and it was only now that he kind of showed up and showed how dangerous he could be. So interesting tidbits there, but keep on the lookout. If you want to watch, go to the NFL Network tonight at 4 p.m. anytime between 4 and 11, you'll see some of those guys running and doing drills and all these other things. Should be fun. It's a heck of a receiver class. I think that they could wait until the fifth or even sixth rounds and get a very talented receiver that I've already looked at, and I'm like, man, those guys would be good. If you want a name, Juwan Jennings out of Tennessee. All right, time for the first break. I'll be back. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about this, this CBA and the impact that it has right after this. All right, we're back here. Let's get into more of the CBA talk because things have heated up. I told you yesterday that the player representatives voted to at least send it to the entire players' union. Now, they didn't send it with a recommendation to approve it. They just voted to at least get it to the players. Now, to understand the full process, and I think I explained this before with Tony on our Tony Tuesday show, but how this works is when the NFL owners agree to a CBA, they send it over to the players' union. And then the players' union, they have like a board of representatives that has like its own like council. And then if the majority of that council agrees that the CBA should be looked at, they'll send it out to the entire players' union. But if 2/3 of the council, like a supermajority, comes and agrees to the seat with the CBA, then they'll send it out with a recommendation for everyone to approve it. So that recommendation didn't go out, and boy, has it been interesting, because a lot of players have come out and voiced their opinion. Now, like we already talked about J.J. Watt coming out and saying a hard no on that proposed CBA, but a lot of stars have spoken against it. Richard Sherman retweeting J.J. Watt saying, "Leadership, I'm with you. Please communicate with your team rep." And going with J.J. Watt. Ramon Foster has come out and said that he has to represent players and he doesn't think it's a good idea. Russell Wilson comes out and with a very interesting tweet that I think kind of was the most. He brought the most information to the table, stating the NBA and the MLB are doing it right. Players come first. All NFL players deserve the same. We should not rush the next 10 years for today's satisfaction. I vote no. And Russell Wilson bringing up there that basically the NFL, they're kind of pushing it on them right now, right? Like the NFL is saying we want to hear back by the end of the combine. This needs to be over soon, because we're doing it. That's a power play by the NFL, and this is what they do. They push the players to make decisions that are hasty and agree to things that they probably shouldn't agree to. And again, there's no clock on this right now. They have plenty of time. The CBA isn't up this season. It's up at the end of this next season. So, I mean, there's plenty of time for them to organize, to talk amongst themselves, to prepare, and get ready. And there were some other like professional responses, and then there were some people who were pretty candid, including Steelers center Marquise Pouncey. Now, Pouncey kind of just made it clear he was not happy with this with this news that they were getting the CBA. I'm going to read what Pouncey said on his own Twitter account via video. It looked like he was like riding in a Jeep, and he was just emphatic about his no here, and also kind of signaling what the players should do. So, quote, "Man, this S is so effing crazy, man. I vote no. F that. Oh, I'm sorry. F that S." Whew. I mean, the profanity. He's just, this is Marquise, man. When he gets going. Our NFLPA, the dudes at the top, the leaders, man, that S is all effing BS. F that. I mean, seriously, it's just this tirade of just bomb, F-bomb after this, after that. He said, "They ain't looking out for the best of the players. If y'all want my vote, the Pouncey twins vote no." So he's voting for him and his brother, which is kind of funny. And then he continues, "And if any player on any one of our teams, if y'all hurting for rent money or anything while we go through this lockout, call us. Man, we got way more money than what they had back in the days. We ain't got to worry about that. All the vets on each team, stand the F up. Stand up. Show these guys that we care about them. Man, I care about all you young players, and I love you guys to death. I ain't going to let y'all down. Trust and believe. They're trying to sign a BA deal just so these MFers can sit and their president can go around and smile and say, "I got something done." He said, you didn't get S done." Whew, man. Marquise laid it on thick there. But point being, taking away the profanity and getting to the point that he's making, often what happens in these situations is that the question goes to, can the poorest of the players afford to strike? Because, yeah, he makes, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars, but, you know, that's kind of what it is. You know, that's kind of what it's like. You know, like, oh, wait, you know, that money's cut off. I expected more to come. And Pouncey's saying, like, you know, we got several multimillionaires, you know, with guys making money in the tens of millions. They can help these guys out. And this is where the union has to be stronger. But I think it's also a misconception that the poorest guys are the ones that cracked the first. The last NFL strike that happened, there was a lockout. It was the richest players. It was the Emmitt Smiths, the Troy Aikmans, the Michael Irvins, the Cowboys, when they broke the line. If you remember the movie The Replacements, where they had to beat the Cowboys, you know, that's a true story on, you know, maybe not with Shane Falco and all that stuff, but, you know, but that's actually what happened. The richest guys saw that their deals were drying up, and they were like, "Well, I want to make my money." So they went back and they played, and once they broke the picket line, everyone else is kind of like, "What am I doing this for?" And that's what's going to have to happen. There's always going to be someone that steps in and kind of does something weird. So if you want my opinion, I think that there's still a long way to go with the players actually unifying and taking it to the NFL. I think it would be great for them, and I think it would be great for the sport in general, because the players should get more say in how this kind of stuff plays out. But, you know, whether they hold, I doubt they will, just because of their history of being bullied by the NFL in this situation. But, you know, you never know. There might be some new resolve there that changes the conversation. But all that to get into, I wanted to talk about an interesting tidbit here that Dale Lally brought up in his latest 10 thoughts. Now, Dale does this column, where basically he brings up 10 points here. And one of his points was that with this new CBA, and I talked about this months ago when we first talked about the potential of getting an extra game, if the players can agree to this sooner rather than later, the CBA may include more money for this season to go to the players, which would open up a lot more salary cap space, which would also open up the chance to maybe sign some more players to keep them around. That, of course, being Bud Dupree and also even Javon Hargrave. Dale basically wrote on DKPittsburghSports.com, go read that one now if you can, that the new CBA, if it brings the kind of money that we're talking about here, you know, some people are estimating that the, and this is what he says, even the Steelers, you know, kind of are estimating that you're getting an additional $30 million in cap space. That's huge. That means you could tag Bud Dupree. You don't even have to sign long term. You could tag Bud Dupree and get Javon Hargrave and still be living well. So that's an interesting point there. If the Steelers pull that off, that's amazing. And they wouldn't even have to cut people to do all that. So there's layers to this CBA stuff. I still don't think it justifies, you know, the owners bullying the players. And I do think the players deserve much more than what they get. They run the NFL. They you know, they don't run the NFL, like, you know, making decisions. But without these players, the NFL would be nothing. And especially now with the XFL plan right now, it's not like the scabs that the NFL would be bringing would be top of the line. You know, there wasn't always another league in the way for them, and now you got guys that are under contract working in this other league, you know, after your season's over. So people are kind of like, we're not just gonna take, you know, mediocre football like they did in the last strike. So interesting tidbits there. There's reasons for if you're a fan, you'll want this to end. I side with the players in thinking that they need to represent themselves as best as possible to get the best deal possible, considering how dangerous the sport is and how much this impacts their lives moving forward. They should get more for what they do. All right, that's that. I'm going to get into Throwback Thursday next. All right, so Throwback Thursday is back, and I'm going to get into this because I wanted to do something a little offbeat. I don't always make it something obvious, like, you know, the past Throwback Thursdays I've done was a specific Steelers-Ravens game just because of Troy Polamalu. Then I did a Bill Nunn one. So I kind of want to do, I don't want to just like, oh yeah, remember Super Bowl 43? That was great, guys. No, I don't want to do that. But I do want to do specific moments relative to sort of the topics that we've been on. And all week, you've heard me going off about Ben Roethlisberger, talking about how big it is that he's throwing the ball, clowning people like Adam Schein, who think it's not big, all that to the side. Now, when you think of big moments, you think of Ben Roethlisberger, you think of his rookie season with his first, like, real big comeback against the Cowboys, and then those games against the Patriots and the Eagles where they were both undefeated and he took them down. You think about his Super Bowl runs. You know, the first time when they beat the Bengals on the road, then, you know, they beat the Colts and he had the shoestring tackle, and then they beat the Broncos where he had like two really huge first half touchdown passes to Hines Ward that were just on the money. Even though he disappeared in the Super Bowl, you think about that. Then you think about his touchdown throw to Santonio Holmes. You think about, even recently, you think about some of the big games he's had. He had back-to-back games where he had six touchdowns in each one. I'm going to skip all of those. I'm going back to what I think was the most dominant performance and most impressive performance of Ben Roethlisberger as a leader for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that's back in 2009, just before Christmas, when they played the Green Bay Packers. Now, the Steelers were 6-7. The Packers were I think they were 9-4, but the Steelers were fighting for everything. If they lost this game, they were pretty much out of the playoffs. They would end up missing the playoffs this year, but they had a very young team, they had a very young offense that was still developing a lot of things. They had Mike Wallace was bursting onto the scene. They still had Santonio Holmes, still had Hines Ward. Their offensive line was just about to start changing in the next year when they would draft Marquise Pouncey. But Ben Roethlisberger was having to compensate for a lot because the defense that had been number one consistently for quite some time was, you know, bottom of the top 10 because Troy Polamalu had been gone for the season. So this game was impressive because it was Aaron Rodgers versus Ben Roethlisberger, and it was a duel. Ben Roethlisberger came out firing on the first possession. I think it was after the first down they had from his own 32-yard line. He just drops back, play action, fires deep, and there's Mike Wallace catching it inside the 10 and finishing off with a big play touchdown. Mike Wallace, I believe he had 10 touchdowns this season. He was on fire, and this was part of what Ben Roethlisberger was able to do in his youth, because this is Ben Roethlisberger's, his fifth or sixth year in the league. He was able to sling the ball, and any big play receivers, he could take advantage of that. So that's what that happened. But then here's the thing, you know, Aaron Rodgers came right back at him. Came up through the ball all the way down the field, hit a Greg Jennings all the way down the field with a pass over the middle. If you remember Tyrone Carter, yeah, it was rough. Now, I know people, people get on Keith Butler a lot. Oh, this guy, he has linebackers covering wide receivers. Well, the first touchdown, it's funny because Lawrence Timmons was trying to cover Greg Jennings all the way down the field, and then Tyrone Carter came to help, and it was just bad. And that was Dick LeBeau's defense back in the day. Dick LeBeau is one of the greatest defensive minds of all time. You think you know more than Dick LeBeau, get the heck out of here. You know, it was his defense that Bill Belichick felt like they needed to cheat the most to stop. Anyways, so this ties up with seven. But then Ben Roethlisberger is, you know, once again, comes out, connects with some big passes, finds Hines Ward over the middle. Man, don't you miss Hines Ward? Just the smile on his face. And he would just find, and this is what Ben Roethlisberger, this is what made me most impressed about this game. Every time it came down to something, he would drop back, deal with pressure, and find somebody. He knew where everyone was. Heath Miller, crossing route over the middle, he catches it. He rolls out, finds Hines Ward again, converting like two or three third downs in this drive. Then getting out to Santonio Holmes, and man, they missed that guy. They got him on a screen, and they get him inside the two, and then Rashard Mendenhall basically runs over two or three guys to get into the end zone. An emphatic response by the Steelers, but it's, again, it's led by Ben Roethlisberger picking apart the Packers and forcing them to have to deal with the passing game, getting into the red zone and letting Mendenhall take care of it. And Mendenhall was starting to come about himself. He was a second year player at this point. After missing the previous season because of an injury from Ray Lewis hit, he started to really find himself this season. Then the Steelers defense, they actually come out and get a stop. William Gay forced an incomplete pass. And then Ben Roethlisberger late in the first gets a chance to sort of build a lead, but a young Clay Matthews comes in and he'll get a huge sack. Originally it's a fumble, then it's overruled as a fumble, but still he gets a big play, and that stalls the drive, giving Aaron Rodgers a chance to tie the game up. But the defense holds. Aaron Rodgers drives his team down the field. And they end up having a kick a field goal that they miss. Ben Roethlisberger, mid-second, you know, now this duel of quarterbacks has kind of stalled for a bit. He drops back, and he gets more heat. Clay Matthews, another sack, and another stop. And then you start to see the Packers starting to jump on the Steelers offensively. Aaron Rodgers throwing all over the place, completing passes underneath. And the Steelers pass rush is trying to bring it, right? They know that their secondary is in trouble. And then as the Packers are in the red zone, a young Aaron Rodgers dealing with a four-man rush finds the seam and runs into the end zone, about a 15-yard touchdown run, and it ties it up at 14 late in the second. But then Ben, being Ben, third down, converting another one to Heath Miller. Man, don't you miss people saying Heath all the time. That was just such a cool thing to think about there. But just finding people all over the field. His rapport with Santonio Holmes getting another big play, and then you had another pass. This one to Mawelde Moore that turned out to be a touchdown. And it was a really well drawn play where they had him run behind Santonio Holmes, and that was all Ben Roethlisberger needed. And the Steelers get a score right before the end of the first half to take the lead 21-14, and then Aaron Rodgers did one of his Hail Mary throws that the Steelers defended actually pretty well, so the Steelers get the ball back up 21-14, and they know they can't just settle with a one possession lead, right? Because the Packers are on them right now. That Aaron Rodgers is coming. The Steelers defense has been struggling, but Ben Roethlisberger finding ways to extend drives as he always did. Completes some huge first downs, finding Hines Ward over the middle. But then eventually, it starts to overwhelm him. He starts to get under more pressure, and he takes a sack on a second and long. That sets up a third and long. They kind of, you know, just let it go, and they end up going for a field goal. And Jeff Reed's back in the game. He gets the lead to 10. So that's a good lead, you know, in the middle of the third, or late in the third, really. But here comes Aaron Rodgers. And this to me, it was this whole thing where you saw Aaron Rodgers being prime Aaron Rodgers and kind of start to be the quarterback that eventually would be the Steelers in the Super Bowl and become the NFL MVP and just all the stuff that he was becoming. You saw in this game with some of the great throws that he was making, and not just a big throw down the field, but like picking apart what the Steelers are trying to do on defense. He comes out, leads an impressive touchdown drive, And this was why I felt like this was Ben's best game, because he never backed down. There's times that he goes up against quarterbacks that put up a ton of numbers, and you kind of see him disappear. He did not go anywhere. He knew his team needed him if they wanted to stay in this playoff race. He knew he had the receivers. He came out, and he was firing. So right after this touchdown, he comes out, hits Hines Ward on a deep crossing pattern. It was very impressive. Then comes out, hitting Heath Miller over the middle, fighting back. The Steelers won't allow themselves to be counted out. They get down into field goal range, get another field goal. They're up six. It's the fourth quarter, and Aaron Rodgers comes out. He, of course, he's gunning again, hitting Jordy Nelson. This is, you know, the start of that tandem, basically. And the Steelers defense, they just have no answers without Polamalu. This is also why Polamalu was just so dominant and why he deserves the respect of that first ballot Hall of Famer, because as great as that defense was, you had a young Lawrence Timmons, you had James Ferrier, you had Casey Hampton, you had Brett Keisel, you had Aaron Smith, you had Ike Taylor and Deshae Townsend, who were the best Steelers cornerback combo of recent memory until, you know, I'd say this Hayden Nelson combo. You had Ryan Clark at free safety, who was a menace to people that try to go over the middle. And all that, and without Troy Polamalu, they couldn't put it together and be that top defense. And they weren't even close. And it shows, because on this touchdown possession, this touchdown drive, there's a run play that goes, that the running back goes right up the sideline, and Tyrone Carter has him in sight, and he can't even touch the guy. And it's just, it's that much of a difference. Now, Tyrone Carter, yeah, I don't mean to bash the guy. He recently posted a bunch of videos talking about why he loves Pittsburgh and he appreciates the city. And he's a good guy. It was just, but it's when you're the guy that has to back up Troy Polamalu, whew, it is rough, because that dude was a legend. It is not easy to make yourself look good when that's the guy you have to replace. So I know this is the Throwback Thursday about Ben. I'm going to get to that, but this was another game that showed how important Troy Polamalu was in the grand scheme of things. So the Packers get that, they score that touchdown, and they take the lead. So they're up 28-27. Ben Roethlisberger on a 2nd and 18, and again, this is prime Ben Roethlisberger. This is the stuff that you're just like, who the heck does this? He drops back. Packers collapse the pocket. He doesn't find anyone initially. He runs around, dodges a tackle, steps up in the pocket, and while stepping up in the pocket and on the run, basically, he fires down the pass into the coverage on 2nd and 18 and finds Hines Ward with the perfect throw to put them in field goal range. That field goal range ends up getting them a shot to make it. Jeff Reed bangs it through. The Steelers up 28-30. And then the controversial decision by Mike Tomlin that would get so much hatred from I remember the fans, they hated this call, but they would go for the onside kick, and they would have an illegal touching penalty because the Steelers touched it too early. And initially it looked like they got it, but the Steelers, they're up 2 points with less than 4 minutes to go, and for me, I remember this game specifically because I'm coming back, right? It's the end. It's right after Snowmageddon, and the entire state of Pennsylvania is just destroyed by the super blizzard that was back then. This is right around that time, and I was coming back from my college, Chain University from Philadelphia, and I was in the marching band, right? And we normally stay. This is like right before this is right when winter break is about to start for a lot of colleges. Normally, we stayed an extra like a couple days for winter break because there was a big basketball game that was a rivalry game for our college, and we would go to that game in Philadelphia. It was always real cool, but the game ended up being canceled because of the storm, and it was huge. And then all the flights to Pittsburgh got canceled. So now I'm sitting there on Cheney's campus. I'm like, how the heck am I getting home for Christmas? Because, you know, I don't got a whole lot of money. I don't got a car. And I remember my friend Montea Neverson. Montea, love you. She was my band mom, basically. We had this weird family tree thing we did in the band, where everyone adopted somebody. But Montea was from Pittsburgh, and And she hit me up. She was like, Chris, I'm rolling today. We're going to leave. And so I was like, well, hey, are we going to be able to see the Steelers game? Because I really want to see them play the Packers. It's a huge game. And she's like, oh, no, we'll make the Steelers game. Well, the day comes and we're ready to move. And we don't leave the campus until noon. It's a 4 o'clock game. And I'm like, Mateo, like, we never going to make the game. You know, and it's icy, it's snowy. She's like, Chris, I got this. So I'm sitting here panicking. Montea, we left this campus with me at 4 o'clock or at noon. I was in my house before 4 o'clock kickoff. Like, I literally saw kickoff, and I'll never forget that because I fell asleep during the car ride. I woke up and she was going 120 down Pennsylvania. That was insane. And I just remember thinking, like, oh my goodness. But she was serious about seeing her Steelers, and that's just how Steelers fans go. So again, that's how big this matchup was, is that I made it from one side of the state of Pennsylvania to the other in under 4 hours, which I have never done since. So again, onside kick, it fails. And the Steelers have given them a short field because the Packers get it. And everyone at the time was like, oh, this is stupid. This is ridiculous. Why would Mike Tomlin call this play? But Mike Tomlin, after the game, would say, listen, we couldn't stop them anyway. And he's right, because here comes Aaron Rodgers and they can't stop him anyways. And they said, hey, you want to give him a shorter field so they score quickly and you get time to have Ben Roethlisberger on the field. He believed in Ben Roethlisberger, and sure enough, Aaron Rodgers hits James Jones. They get a touchdown. They're up 35-0. I think they actually ended up going 36-0. Because they went for two. That I do remember that too, and they got it. So Ben Roethlisberger gets the ball on his own. Like 19, and on the first play, of course, typically of Ben Roethlisberger, he goes backwards. He gets sacked, and they eventually end up having a 3rd-and-7, and Ben, dropping back in the pocket, gets really good protection, and throws a pass that's almost intercepted. It looks like it's over. It's 4th-and-7, but here comes Ben Roethlisberger in the pocket, believing in his linemen, believing in his receivers, and he finds Santonio Holmes over the middle. This isn't over yet, and it's for a big gain. It gets across the 50-yard line. Here comes Ben Roethlisberger, and this was just the firing of the ball all over the place. He then throws a pass. It's tipped, and it's intercepted. It looks like the game's over again, but then there's an illegal contact penalty, and it shows that the Packers, they did knock Ben Hines Ward off of his route. I mean, they just straight up just, like, bucked him. They just knocked him down in the middle of his route. So Ben Roethlisberger gets another chance. It's 3rd-and-15 after a bunch of things didn't work. There's 40 seconds left, and Ben Roethlisberger just dropping back, a deep drop, and he hits Heath Miller, who makes a super catch on the sideline. It's a perfect throw. The cornerback's there. Like, this he shouldn't make this throw. The cornerback is under Heath Miller, and it has to be the perfect catch, but he makes it. It's 3rd-and-15. The game is on the line. The season's on the line. And what happens? Those two come together, make magic, get a first down. Then, with only one timeout left, Ben Roethlisberger finds Heath Miller over the middle of the game. They get down to the 18 yard line, and they call timeout, their last timeout, and the Steelers are huddled up. They're trying to find answers. So they call timeout. They have 18 seconds. That gives them just a couple shots that they got here to make a play. First down, Ben Roethlisberger thinking, hey, if we get inside the red zone, you know, we can make a play here. He throws to Mike Wallace. It's a tough contested pass. He's not bringing that down in heavy traffic. So they got to try again. 2nd-and-10, drops back. It's a 3-man rush, and they get through. They almost get Ben Roethlisberger. He dives and dodges. I just messed up the 5 Ds of dodgeball. Patches O'Houlihan would be so disappointed in me. But he throws it deep into the end zone after dodging several sacks, and there's only 3 seconds left. This is it right here. This is everything's on the line. There's 3 seconds left. They're down 6. They need a touchdown. This, to me, is the defining moment that made Ben Roethlisberger in his young years. I mean, yeah, sure, the Santonio Holmes pass is his biggest moment. But this was like when I was like, man, this guy's ready to start leading as a quarterback. And at this point, they throw up the stats. He had 28 completions on 45 attempts for 484 yards and 2 touchdowns. This would end up being his first 500-yard game because, man, if you don't remember this play, this was the loudest I had heard Hines Field over an offensive play. Troy Polamalu's interception is the loudest I've ever heard, period, when in the AFC Championship game. But this was a close second because Ben Roethlisberger, season on the line, everyone knows it. He's barking out orders. You got Charles Woodson on the other side. Everyone's talking. And he drops back. It's 3rd and 10. It's the last play. He just kind of steps up and from his own 28 just fires the perfect pass to Mike Wallace in the middle of on the side of the end zone, and he pulls it in. It's so reminiscent of Santonio Holmes. There's no 3 defenders in front of him, but it was the perfect pass. There was tight coverage, and it's caught, and the place goes nuts. Hines Field is losing it. The Steelers have tied it. Jeff Reed eventually wins it with an extra point. There's no time left. It was a spectacular finish, and to me, that was like the time when, you know, you didn't just see Ben Roethlisberger stepping up, but you saw Mike Tomlin saying, I believe in Ben Roethlisberger so much that I'm willing to kick an onside kick, give Aaron Rodgers a short field, and Ben Roethlisberger is going to win us this football game, and he did. Now, they ended up just missing the playoffs. They won out the rest of the way because they were 6-7 coming into that game. They went 9-7 on the year, but it just wasn't enough to make the playoffs. And of course, the next year they would end up going to the Super Bowl, but it was just such an impressive showing for Ben Roethlisberger. That's why I wanted to make this my Throwback Thursday. People that think that this guy is down and out because of this, I point to moments like games like this. I point to the game I talked about a month ago on Throwback Thursday with the Steelers-Ravens game where he got his nose broken and he still made a play. There's so much to like about what Ben Roethlisberger's done in his career. And part of it, what's made his career isn't the fact that he has huge stats. It's not him being a pretty boy like some quarterbacks. It's not him having to be a diva quarterback. It's him being gutsy. It's him being resilient. It's him resisting and fighting off all the pressure that's on him and him standing up to the challenge when other people put it to him. That's why I think Ben Roethlisberger is coming back. So that's your Throwback Thursday. Wanted to go back to that huge 37-36 win the Steelers had over the Packers in 2009. One that often gets forgotten because of it stood in between two Super Bowl seasons. I think, to me, that's one of my top Ben Roethlisberger games of all time, and maybe even his best overall performance. And yeah, he has some 6 touchdown games that you could push with. Statistically, he had better games, but that to me was his ultimate, like, stepping up as a leader and taking charge in a big moment that people often overlook. So, hope you like Throwback Thursday. Let me know what you think. If you like the show, please hit that subscribe button. We talk all things Steelers here on the Locked On Steelers. If you could subscribe to us anywhere, whereas Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Stitcher, anywhere the host podcasts, we are there. If you like the show, please also subscribe. Like I said, but also leave a 5-star review with a comment. You do that, and you if you do that and you leave a worker friendly. A work environmentally friendly, the one that I can read over the show, I will read it aloud. We have a new one, and it's from Running Man 4. Thank you very much, Running Man 4, for your 5-star review. Says, fabulous podcast. I've been listening for a year. This is my absolute favorite podcast of any type. Chris is so extremely well-informed, articulate, and passionate. He includes, thank you, Running Man 4. That means a lot, man. He says, he includes national NFL insights along with great Steelers insider scoops. His opinions are so very sound. He's also such a fun, open fellow. Alan from Neffs. Neffs! That's a Pittsburgh reference, baby. oh man, my youth. But anyways, thank you so much. That's the latest 5-star review. If you want your 5-star review on to be read on air, please read it. Please send it in. I will read it on the earliest show that I can. So thanks for doing that. Much appreciated, Running Man 4. If you like, if you want to hear more from me, you can follow me on Twitter at Carter Critiques, where if you follow me, I'll follow you back. Keep me with the @, keep me with the DM. Always done a chat with you guys. If I don't respond right away, please do not take it personally. It's just I got a lot of hats to wear. I still got my day job on top of this, on top of my writing job for TK Pittsburgh Sports and other things that I do and other obligations. You can find my work for my writing work at dkpittsburghsports.com, where if you sign up, you can get a month trial for just 99 cents. And I do my Carter's Classroom column. This past week I did my film analysis on why the Steelers should be so hyped about Ike Hillier being their receivers coach. Breaking down what he did with Terry McLaurin, comparing it to what Deontay Johnson did last year. Interesting stuff there. Go check that out, as well as our other beat writers, Dale Lawley. And then we also cover the Steelers, the Pirates, the Penguins, and the University of Pittsburgh. So lots of stuff, lots of great stuff there. If you love Pittsburgh sports, dkpittsburghsports.com is your destination. Thanks again for listening to Throwback Thursday and this podcast. I'll be back Friday recapping what we saw at the Combine and getting you ready for the weekend. See you tomorrow.